Disqualifications for appointment as director and deputy directors. 14A. A person may not be appointed as a director or deputy director if such person A is not a citizen of the Republic, B, one has a direct or indirect financial or personal interest in the private security interest, or two, represents or is a member of a body representing the interests of employers or employees in the private security industry, or security officers, or any security business. C, is an unrehabilitated insolvent. D, has not obtained such a security clearance by the state security agency as may have been determined by the minister, or E, has been convicted of a criminal offence or which is subject to a pending criminal prosecution.
Satisfied members, satisfied, continue.
Sorry.
Last time I made mention of unsound mind, and you made me to believe that it's inserted somewhere. I'm still checking, I don't see it in this disqualification.
It's a fit and proper on another section, I think.
Chair, can I just say that's in the qualifications, you have to be fit and proper to, this is the disqualification factor, so it's there in the qualification factors.
Normally I would see it, you know, in the disqualification, it should be inserted in the disqualification. You know, that alone, because if you don't have it, and tomorrow you then say a person should not be qualified based on it, he can, you know, start to argue that you are discriminating because it's not specified.
Okay, can you just add that, Honourable George?
Madam Chair, I would advise that you leave the word sound mind. It's very subjective.
That's not what we're going to say. Is not a fit and proper.
Yeah, fit and proper, yes.
That's what we're going to say. Is not
the
a
word
fit
subjective
and
mind. Sound mind is a very subjective.
Is not a fit and proper person. Disqualified then. Can we continue?
Chair, section 16, or clause 16, section 15 of the Principal Act is hereby repealed, and substitution of section 16 of Act 56 of 2001. 17, section 16 of the Principal Act is hereby substituted for the following section. Finances of authority. 16.1, the authority is financed from registration fees, levies or monies from any legitimate source which have accrued to the authority in terms of this Act, the Levies Act or any other law. And B, money that may be appropriated by Parliament where necessary, appropriate and justifiable. Sub 2, the Council must, subject to the Public Finance Management Act and Section 16A, A, account for money received or paid on account of the authority, and B, cause the necessary accounting and other related records to be kept. 3, the records referred to in subsection 2B must be audited by the Auditor General. 4, the Director must report to the Council in respect of the financial affairs, including any investment account of the authority, on a monthly and quarterly basis and as and when required.
Can I ask about the possibility of including a 5 that says explicitly the council is the what's the word of it? Accounting officer. Accounting officer. Mr. B, you differ.
Chair, I differ. The CEO of the company is normal accounting officer. Otherwise, you must explain why we say the council is the accounting officer.
The council is currently also the accounting officer. In an entity, the council is the accounting officer. And the problem is that it's not clear from what we're saying.
Chair, exactly the case, because the chairperson is full time. That's currently. I think what we need is the state law advisors must advise us on that, because I still maintain it is not the council that's it must be the functionary who is the accounting person.
Honourable George.
Madam Chair, I also don't believe it is possible to have a council that means four times a year to be the accounting officer. Because then it means, you see, when it was the chairperson was full time, that was different. But to have a council that meets only four times and say they must be an accounting officer, it's also not very viable. I think the person who works with this thing must account.
Can I just remind members that according to the PFMA, 49.2A,
that's the point that I was coming on it to say. Maybe what is confusing members is here is when you are saying accounting officer, it's an accounting authority, this council itself. Maybe that's what causes them to, miss a point. Accounting authority, the council itself.
Chair, I think if one, what we actually should do is something comes up like this, just quote from the PFMA, and then it's understandable, and then it's fine.
That's the point I'm making. So that if you can put in a five there for us to say that the accounting authority is the council, which means the day-to-day finances will still be run by the director, but the accounting authority is the council. Maybe that's what I said from the word go. Mr. George has got selective hearing. And the fact of the matter is there are also other councils that are part-time councils who are also the accounting authority. But we need to be explicit so that there can be no turnaround in 5 years' time and the director says, no, but I'm the accounting authority, not you. So therefore we need to be explicit about it in the Act. So can we include that five, please? Continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. The bottom of page 33, insertion of section 16A in Act 56 of 2001. 18, the following section is hereby inserted after section 16 of the Principal Act. Annual report 16A. 1, the Council must prepare and submit to the Minister an annual report in terms of section 55(1)(d) of the Public Finance Management Act. 2, the annual report referred to in subsection 1 must include the following documents. A, the audited financial statements prepared in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. B, the Auditor General's report prepared in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. And C, a report on the activities of the authority undertaken.
Can I ask that we have one meeting, please? Continue, please.
A report on the activities of the authority undertaken during the year to which the audit relates, including matters 1, referred to in section 10(1)(a), 26(9) and 32(4), and pertaining to the exemptions granted or refused and the reasons therefor, and 3, pertaining to any investment account of the authority, including any deposits or withdrawals and any reasons therefor. 3, the Minister must table in Parliament a copy of the annual report, financial statements and the audit report on those statements as required by the Public Finance Management Act. 4, the Director must publish, including in a medium accessible to the public, the annual report, financial statements and audit report on those statements once tabled in Parliament.
Can I hear you on this one, members? Can I just ask a question? All this is in the PFMA. Is it necessary for us to repeat it here? Is it better to repeat it here? I'm asking the question to the technical team.
Chair, although it's in the PFMA, we've done it for other pieces of legislation like IPID and the Civilian Secretarial Bill.
all I'm worried about is three. The minister must table in Parliament a copy of the annual report. It is the accounting authority, according to the PFMA, must submit a report and financial statements for tabling in Parliament through the accounting officer of a department designated to the executive authority. So can we maybe just look at the wording of that so that it's in line with the PFMA wording? So it's three that needs to be looked at. Sir?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I would want to agree with the statement because the accounting officer, in this regard, referring to the accounting authority through the director, will submit to the minister. And the minister is the only person who can submit to Parliament. So I attempt to agree with the statement. However, I understand equally that the PFMA is limiting and focusing on the accounting officer to do its responsibility in terms of Section 38, 40, and what have you. That is the emphasis based on that one.
Chairperson, I'm also in agreement with it. I think especially one takes into account that in terms of the legislation, although the Secretary of Police is not yet the accounting officer, but it can be so in the near future, in the next financial year. Because I think one could also read in here it could be the National Commissioner, but I think the committee has already indicated that the National Commissioner does not have a link with the Act otherwise. So I would say, especially if the idea is that it would be the Secretary of Police that will be the accounting, not the accounting, but through which.
Not the Secretary of Police.
Well, it's the accounting, it must be an accounting officer designated by the minister. So the minister must designate, for example, the National Commissioner or someone who can, through which. That's how I understand it.
No. The accounting authority, which is the council, which we have just put in, must submit the report and financial statements for tabling in Parliament through the accounting officer, which is the director, of a department designated by the executive authority. That's the minister.
We're always saying
bring it in line with the PFMA. We're saying that in any case, but it's a duplication to some extent. So just bring it in line with the PFMA. Okay? Continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 19 is just a repeal of Section 17, 18 and 19 of the Act. Then amendment of Section 20 of Act 56 of 2001. Chair, and it is in this section that the parties that the Secretary has referred to. I'll start first with the part that's already covered here. Section 20 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the addition in subsection 1 of the following paragraph. C, a security business may not use the services of a person who is not registered in terms of this Act to render a security service. Then by the substitution in subsection 2 for paragraph A of the following paragraph, if all the persons performing executive or managing functions in respect of such security business are registered as security service providers, unless such person is exempted in terms of this Act. Chair, then I think the subsection C is the part that the Secretary referred to in respect of the foreign investing.
Chairperson, what we were proposing is basically that we reinsert the clause that was in the initial bill and that we then deal with the agreements and the transitional provisions under the transitional. So it would say that if at least 51% of ownership and control is exercised by South African citizens, despite subsection 2, the minister may, taking into account the security interests of the Republic, prescribe a different percentage of ownership and control in respect of different categories of security businesses, including but not limited to, and then the list of guard and close protection, response services, assets and trust, event security, manufacturing, private investigation. We have got copies here, although the transitional...
Chairperson, we are lost now. What is the Secretary talking about?
We are in the bush now.
No.
Because
members?
We don't have any documents.
They will give us the documents. When we started this morning, Mr. George, please.
No, Chairperson. What we require to know is that when the secretary starts to read, you must give us the documents.
That is what I'm ruling on now. If I'm just given the opportunity, can I also get a copy? I don't have a copy either. So you're not in it alone. When we started this morning, the secretary raised the point that there's been movement on this issue, and that the Minister of Trade and Industry has also published a concept act regarding this issue. Just let me finish. I will take all hands thereafter. We then ruled that when we get to the relevant sections, they will introduce it there. And we are now at the relevant section, and that's what the secretary is now introducing. So when everybody's got it in front of them, can you then slowly go through it again, secretary, please, and say what is the correct numbering again?
It's in certain paragraph C, in subsection 2 of 20. And we can deal with the transitional provision when we come to that section of the Act. But it is, if at least 51% of the ownership and control is exercised by South African citizens, and two, despite subsection 2, the minister may, taking into account the security interests of the Republic, prescribe a different percentage of ownership and control in respect of different categories of security businesses, including, but not limited to, and then the list A to L, which includes guarding, close protection, response security, assets and transit, event security, manufacturers, importers, and distributors of monitoring devices, private investigators, security training, electronic security locksmiths, and security advisors.
Honourable Stuber.
Chair, first question is, how did we come that we back to this again? We went at length to discuss these people, there's companies that's on the JSEI. How are we going to, by simply drawing the line, say you're not allowed to, if that's the case, then we must go on that. How did the secretariat come with this? Was it by the minister? You mentioned that the Minister of Trade and Industry had a concept. Can we get that concept in and then look at it? But just to sit here and now discuss about it, I think that is not the right way to do it.
Honourable George.
Madam Chair, in the 90s, that's exactly what I was pushing very hard. But unfortunately, I must say, Madam Chair, the horses have bolted. We are too late now. If you look at that time, some of these industries, that could have been easily done. At the moment, most of them are in the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, which nobody can control. Now, if you say, how are you going to manage this 51% when the exchanges are done sometimes through internet and all other things? I hope that if the secretariat is going to bring that to us, they're going to come with some research and some means, because it doesn't help us to pass a law which we'll not be able to enforce. With what is happening today, how are we going to make sure that this law is enforced? Let alone the merits of it first, and just how are we going to enforce it?
Honourable Kulabana.
Yeah, we went through this. We had public hearings. We had enormous amounts of debate on this. What is this is basically saying is, we are giving the minister the right to expropriate companies. That is what it's about. Take over 51% ownership of companies that are basically the security guards that civilians pay to guard their homes because they need it. Now, expropriation is never going to be constitutional. We've already got one bill in the courts, and to put a second one there is just inexcusable. Every single presentation we had on the part of the industry challenged this, and it was quite rightly taken out. And now at the last minute, now it's brought back onto the table. I'm astounded, absolutely astounded.
I want to remind you, when we started on the 13th, 20th, I can't remember when we, what was the date? The 13th. I made it clear to members that this issue is not off the table. I made it quite clear to members. I said it not once, I didn't say it twice, in fact I said it last week again, that this issue is not off the table, that there are still certain things happening that needs to be taken cognizance before it happens. Yes, the industry were unhappy about it, as they would be. But we also have to take the security of the country into play. And I think the question that the Honourable George has asked in terms of how are they going to make sure about it is the important question. And that's the question where the secretaries say they want to come back to us tomorrow in terms of the transitional arrangements for this specific section. Remember, the minister published that concept legislation only on Friday. It's no use we ignore the fact that this is a reality that we've got to deal with. Honourable Ndlovu, I see your hand. Honourable Legete, Honourable Stubbe.
Well, Jefferson, there are two very important principles in what we're doing now. You have said it a long time ago that there's something coming. Today, we're towards the end of the bill, and this document comes to us, and it makes us to think what we have talked about in 20 days after. That's the first principle. Second principle, that we don't know where does it come from. If it comes from the Secretary of Police, which is a background to this, because we have talked about this thing before. Lastly, Chairperson, it doesn't mean that if it's said by the Secretary of Police, we are going to take it like that. We have to make sure that we satisfy ourselves that it's correct or not. It doesn't matter who says it what, because now, we are being told this. We must look for 51%. We must go out now and look for 51%. 1, 2, 3, up to 51%. No, it can't be done like that, Chavis.
Members, again, the Secretary of Police is not speaking on behalf of the Secretary of Police. He's speaking on behalf of the technical team. First thing first. I warned members that it might happen. I warned you throughout that it might happen, depending on how quickly certain things fall in place. I think in order for us to deal with it properly, Secretary, technical team, we need to look at this in terms of the transitional arrangements as well. If I can just get an opportunity to finish what I want to say, then we can actually continue with the meeting as well.
Yeah.
Please. I want you to take us through this. You've done it now. How far are you in terms of transitional arrangements?
Chair, we should be able to look at something this afternoon to present to the committee in terms of the transitional arrangements.
Will you be in a position to give us transitional arrangements tomorrow morning? In fact, if possible, it be emailed to members this afternoon still or this evening still. Agreed? Agreed. Mr. Joe.
I must say, madam, I must confess, I'm one of the people who support this if it is practical. But they must also tell us the inhibiting factor. Because there are, at the moment there are inhibiting factors. They must tell us so that how do we pass those. I don't want to sit here, we pass a bill and then tomorrow it's just a white paper, nobody takes it serious. When they come tomorrow, it's not only the transition, also the inhibiting factors. And how are we going to deal with that?
I agree with you, and I would suggest that what we do is that tomorrow morning, Secretary, we put aside the first hour for you to take us through, for members to ask questions around it, etc., and even to improve if possible. Honourable Stubbe.
Voorzitter, ek gaan Afrikaans praat. As daar iets gebeur het, wat hierdie ding getrigger het, dan wil ons weet wat het is, en ons moet die dokumentatie hê. Ek gaan nie in 'n komitee sit en daar kom 'n voorstel en ek sê ja en amen op die voorstel nie. Ons het hier oor gepraat, ons het lank hier oor gepraat, ons het hard hier oor gepraat, ons het sag hier oor gepraat. Dis een kant toe gesit, dis uitgeskryf, dis nie eers in die definisie nie. die definitie praat van 'n geskikte persoon. Hy praat nie van 'n 51% of 'n wat nie. Hier kom iets uit die bloute uit. En dit moes aangevuur gewees het deur iets wat daar buite gebeur het wat ons nie weet nie. En as dit die minister van Trading Industrie se konsep is wat hy van gepraat het, dan wil ons die konsep sien en ons wil weet wat dit is. Nou, as dit 'n konsep is, dan is dit nog net 'n konsep, dan kan ons dit nie in 'n wet implementeer nie. Dankie.
I will make sure that members get, can I ask Secretary, the technical team also get as the concept legislation from Trade and Industry that was published on Friday so that we can have a look at it. Members, I'm not asking you to adopt anything at this stage. Throughout, when we said in November last year, we sent the technical team to do two things. The one was the funding, because Treasury said to us, we're not going to have a separate vote on CIRA. That was the one thing. The second thing, because of the public hearings, we said, go, it was clear that CIRA, who introduced the bill, didn't have public hearings and public participation with the industry itself. We then said to the technical team, with the blessing of the minister, that please go and do the necessary negotiations. Find out from Treasury, find out from wherever else is necessary so that we have this. So I, Mr. Stuber, I'm not expecting you to agree on anything at this point in time. What I'm saying is that it's now introduced. They still need to work on transitional arrangements. I'm going to ask the secretary who's assisting us that Babalba will be aware that you need to distribute that document, the transitional arrangements, to members as soon as she gets it from the technical team as well. Mr. Legeto.
Chair, I definitely concur that we have challenges here. I need also to know, Chair, what is the ownership percentage presently? You are talking here about at least 51%. But also to me, if I can be told the ownership percentage. Thanks, Chair, if you understand me.
Mr. Legeto, the ownership currently, there is no limitations on it. That is the current situation. So can we please move off this one, continue with the rest, we come back to it tomorrow morning. There's still work that needs to be done around it.
Not necessarily that I've got anything against. I just wanted to advise that while we appreciate and recognize all languages in South Africa, not everybody can speak every language. So we are trying to compromise in meeting each other halfway. Once we start speaking our own languages, may we then explore, you know, the interpretation. Because what the Honourable Member has said earlier, I absolutely had nothing from what he was saying. And then for us to avoid me coming back and talk my language, can we please?
That is my fault. I should have translated. I apologise for that. I should have translated what the Honourable Member said. The Honourable Member basically repeated what he said previously in English, that this was discussed in detail. There was lots of discussions on it. And that it comes now, and they talk about the concept legislation. They want to see the concept legislation. He was also saying that he believes something triggered this outside of the meeting, and if so, he wants to know what it is. I have then, just in the response, you've heard what I've said in the response, so I don't have to respond to that. Mr. Stuber, that I represent more or less what you've said. Thank you very much. But my apologies, I should have translated it. Can we continue, please?
Thank you, Chair. We are on the amendment of Section 20, paragraph C, by the substitution for subsection 5 of the following subsection. The Minister may, after taking into consideration the recommendations of the Exemption Advisory Committee referred to in Section 28, by noticing the Gazette, exempt any A security service provider or security service provider belonging to a category or class specified in the notice, either generally or subject to such conditions as may be specified in the notice, from the operation of any provision of this Act, or B, service, activity, practice, equipment, person, or entity from any provision of this Act, as long as it does not prejudice the achievement of the objects of this Act. D, by the addition of the following subsection, 6, the Minister must take a decision within 90 days of receipt of the application for exemption contemplated in this Act, and in the case of refusal, provide the applicant with reasons within 30 days of the date of receipt of a request for reasons.
Satisfied, members?
Yes.
Honourable George and Honourable
this is linked to what we're talking about. I don't believe that we should discuss this. For instance, assuming we agree, I would be very worried to give, this is more now go beyond police. I would have a problem to give this only to the Minister of Police. You must understand it affects foreign relations and all other departments. So I'm saying, but I don't want to discuss it now until we discuss. Once we discuss, I would raise my concern if you agree on giving this purely to one minister, that is the Minister of Police, on issues which also deal with foreign affairs, trade and industry and all and so on.
Yeah, I must also just remind members that it's not only referring to the section, it's also referring to some other stuff as well, and that it's not the minister on its own, it's the exemption advisory committee will inform. But I take your point, and there might be a good suggestion in what the Honourable George is saying already.
Thank you, Chairperson. On 20AC, a security business may not. Why do we use may instead of must not? On 20AC, the new insertion, a security business may not, on page 36. I'm suggesting that we say must not.
Members, it's on page 36, 20AC. A security business must not use the service of a person who is not registered in terms of this Act to render a security service. Correct?
Sebastian, this is normally how a prohibition is drafted, Sebastian. It has never been read any other way. It's a prohibition. It says you may not do something. So it's how legislation is drafted when you're drafting a prohibition.
Honourable George.
Madam Chair, I think May there is very open. I would suggest that a security business may not use the services of a person who is not registered. This Act is about the registration of all people who are involved in security services. If now we're going to open and say it may, then we're opening it. I understand the Leonard Trump saying that's how they craft laws. But this would open this. We want all the security that operates in this country to be registered. And any deviation from that must be regarded as flouting the laws of this industry.
Commissioner Jacobs, can I hear on this?
Chairperson, I think where the discretion is given and you say may, it is open. But if you say may not, I understand what the state law advisor is saying. This is normally how a prohibition is phrased. And I think it's totally different from a situation where you say a person may do that. Because if you may do that, it's a totally open discretion. But if you say someone may not, it means he may not do it. And within the context, I don't think linguistically it will make totally a difference to say must, but it just don't sound right to me. And maybe I'm too used to the way in doing it. But I agree with the state law advisor that may not, I think, is the correct use here, Chair.
Members, what they are saying is English. It is English. May not, but it means they cannot do it. There's no discretion on it. Are we happy that we leave it as may? Okay. Happy, continue, please.
Thank you, Chair. Insertion of Section 20A in Act 56 of 2001. 21, the following section is hereby inserted in the Principal Act after Section 20. Exemption Advisory Committee. 28, the Exemption Advisory Committee is hereby established. 2, the committee consists of a representative of the A, Authority, B, Civilian Secretariat, C, Department of Home Affairs, D, Service, E, Department of Trade and Industry, and F, State Security Agency, appointed by the Minister. 3, the representative of the Civilian Secretariat must be a legally qualified person and must chair the committee. 4, the committee must make recommendations to the Minister in respect of exemptions referred to in Section 20, brackets 5. 5, the Minister may prescribe procedural matters and the factors to be considered in relation to the function of the committee referred to in subsection 4. 6, the regulations referred to in subsection 5 must be tabled in the National Assembly for scrutiny and adoption, A, within 6 months of promulgation of this Act, and B, thereafter at least 30 days before promulgation of the regulations, while it is in session or after the commencement of the next ensuing session.
Satisfied, members? Honourable Mullabut?
That's at the top, D. What service are we talking about? Police.
It's defined in the Act, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Okay, can we continue? Continue, please.
Amendment of Section 21 of Act 56 of 2001. 22, Section 21 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. A, by the substitution in subsection 1 for paragraph B of the following paragraph. B, the application fee as determined by the Council. B, the insertion in subsection 1 of the paragraph B of the following paragraphs. BA, a certified copy of a valid identity document of a person referred to in paragraph A. BB, a design, sketch or photograph of the security service provider's insignia, emblem, title or symbol, whether on a uniform, vehicle or otherwise, and BC, a color sketch or photograph of the security service provider's uniform.
Satisfied, members, that were changes that we proposed? Agreed. Continue.
Insertion of Section 21A in Act 56 of 2001. 23, the following section is hereby inserted in the Principal Act after Section 21. Categories of security businesses. 21A1, the authority may register a security business meeting the requirements in Sections 21 and 23 under any one or more of the following categories. A, guarding. B, close protection. C, response security. D, assets in transit. E, event security, if manufacturers, importers and distributors of listed equipment defined in the Interception of Communications and Provision of Communication Related Information Act 2002, Act No. 70 of 2002, G, private investigators, H, security training, I, electronic security, J, locksmiths, or K, security advisors. 2, the Minister may, by notice in the Gazette, determine additional categories of security businesses. 3, the authority must determine training standards in respect of the categories referred to in subsection 1. And 4, a notice referred to in subsection 2 must be tabled in Parliament for notification within A, 14 days if Parliament is in session, or B, 14 days after the next ensuing session if Parliament is not in session. Chair, maybe I can just say that in sub 2, the may there, I think is also correct in the sense that it's not really a must if there is a need for it. Thank you, Chair.
Agreed, members. Continue.
Chair, substitution of Section 22 of Act 56 of 2001. 24. Section 22 of the Principal Act is hereby substituted for the following section. Renewal of registration, 22.1. The Minister must prescribe, through regulations, procedures in respect of the renewal of registration by registered security service providers and the conditions and requirements for the granting of such applications. 2A, the registered security service provider must apply for the renewal of the relevant category of registration within the period determined by the minister by notice in the Gazette. B. Different periods may be determined in terms of paragraph A in respect of different categories of security businesses for registration. C. If an application for the renewal of registration has been lodged within the period contemplated in subsection 2, the registration remains valid until the application is decided. 3. An application for renewal of a registration contemplated in subsection 1 must, in addition to any requirement in terms of this Act, be accompanied by A. A certified copy of the existing registration certificate, and B. Such other information as may be prescribed. 4. The registration of any security service provider who fails to apply for the renewal of registration before the end of the period determined by the Minister in terms of subsection 2 lapses subject to compliance with section 26(5). And 5. The authority must process an application for renewal within 6 months of receipt thereof.
Satisfied, members? Agreed. Continue.
Amendment of Section 23 of Act 56 of 2001. 25. Section 23 of the Principal Act is hereby amended A by the substitution in subsection 1 for paragraph C of the following paragraph. C. As complied with the relevant prescribed training requirements in respect of any particular category referred to in section 21A. B. By the substitution in subsection 1 for paragraph D of the following subsection. D. Was not found guilty of an offence specified in the schedule. C. By the substitution in subsection 1 for paragraph H of the following subsection. H. Is not currently employed in the public administration in circumstances where such registration may conflict with the legislative provision applicable to the applicant. G. By the substitution in subsection 2 of the word and at the end of the paragraph A, the insertion of the word and at the end of paragraph B, and the addition of the following paragraph. C. Such security business furnishes information on the nature, scope and activities of the security business with reference to the categories referred to in section 21A1. E. By the substitution for subsections 4 and 5 of the following subsections. 4. The authority may refuse the registration of any person who, at the time of submission or consideration of the application, is under state investigation in respect of an offence specified in the schedule, or who is being criminally prosecuted in respect of such an offence. 5. Despite any provision to the contrary, a person in the permanent employ of the service, the State Security Agency, the South African National Defence Force, or the Department of Correctional Services may not be registered as a security service provider whilst so employed.
Can I hear you? Satisfied? Honourable Le Guin.
Thanks, Chair. Please allow me to take you a little bit back, Chair, on page 41. You say 22(2A). The registered security service provider must apply for renewal of the relevant category of registration within the period determined by the minister. Are you not making this the responsibility of the minister now to go and go around the I'm talking to not you in person, to go around, check whether the license has expired or not? I thought probably it would be easier and abdicate the security service provider would be abdicating his responsibility of automatically renewing the license. Like, you know, when I drive my car, it's my responsibility to know that my car has license has lapsed. I must go and renew it. I just need to check whether are we not making this the responsibility of the minister and cause havoc. Thanks.
Honourable Member, that provision is in the Act. It's never been implemented. So what we are saying now is Minister must determine dates on which it must happen. That's the only thing that Minister must do. So Minister would say on the 1st of April 2015, all guarding security services must renew. So that's the only thing that Minister's got to do. So your fear, you don't have to worry, we're not doing that. We're not doing that. Honourable George.
You finish with that, Madam. Page 42H is not currently employed in the public administration. Can you explain for before I might be interpreting story wrong? What does that paragraph mean?
You can respond to that, Commissioner Jacobs. On page 42, right at the bottom. Just explain the paragraph.
Yeah. Sure, I think it very closely relates to subsection 5 on the next page, which prohibits the security services to be employed in the security industry. Now, this page is also a prohibition on persons employed. So a person may not be currently employed in the public administration where it is prohibited. In other words, if there are regulations, etc., that prohibits the participation of that person in the security industry.
If I can try to assist. With other words, we say nobody from state security, nobody from police, nobody from defense. We state outright. But Home Affairs might have a similar policy that says their people are not allowed. So it's making provision for that. For other departments, for certain, were similar provisions. That's all it does. It's just to make provision for that. Happy with it?
I'm not happy with that. I just say, here's the theory of employment.
Yep. Can we continue then?
Page 42, Chair. Amendment of Section 26 of Act 56 of 2001. Section 26 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. A. By the substitution for subsection 1 and 2 of the following subsections. 1. The authority must suspend the registration of security service provider if there is a prima facie case of A. improper conduct in terms of this Act, or B. the commission of an offence referred to in the schedule. B. by the insertion after subsection 1 of the following subsections. 1A. The authority may suspend the registration of security service provider if A. the security service provider fails to comply with the obligation to pay the levy in terms of Section 4 of the Levies Act, or B. the security service provider fails to comply with any other provision of this Act. Chair, I think the committee indicated here there must be a difference between the must and the may in this regard. 1B. The registration of a security service provider may be suspended subject to the provisions of the promotion of, you'll just insert the promotion of Administrative Justice Act 2000, Act number 2 of 2000. C. By the substitution for subsections 2 and 3 of the following subsections. 2. The authority may suspend the registration of a security business if any of the grounds contemplated in subsection 1 pertain to a person referred to in section 22. 3. The effect of a suspension of registration is that the security service provider whose registration is suspended may not render any security service, but during the period of such suspension, the security service provider is still bound by all the obligations of a registered security service provider provided for in this Act and in the Levies Act. D. By the substitution in subsection 4 of the words preceding paragraph A of the following words, the authority must, subject to section 5(3) and the provisions of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act 2000, Act number 2 of 2000, withdraw the registration of the security service provider by written notice served on the security service provider if E. By the substitution in subsection 4 for paragraph A of the following paragraph A, the security service provider has furnished to the authority information in connection with the application for registration, which is false. If by the substitution for subsection 5 of the following subsection 5. Subject to the provisions of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act 2000, Act No. 2 of 2000, the registration of the security service provider lapses if A, it is not renewed as contemplated in section 22, or B, the amount payable for levies in terms of section 2 of the Levies Act is not paid to the authority within 3 months of the date of suspension of the registration of the security service provider concerned, unless the authority determines otherwise. G, by the insertion after subsection 5 of the following subsection, 5A, if the registration of the security service provider has lapsed in terms of section 5, the authority must publish a notice in the Gazette indicating A, the name of the security service provider, B, the period after which the registration has lapsed, C, the reason for the lapsing of registration, and D, the effect of the lapsing of registration, and H, by the addition of the following subsections. 9. The authority, through the council, must report any suspension or withdrawal of registration made in terms of subsection 7 and any upliftment of suspension of registration made in terms of subsection 8 to the minister within 30 days of the suspension, withdrawal or upliftment. 10. The authority must include any report referred to in subsection 9 in its annual report.
You members satisfied? Agreed? Continue.
Amendment of section 28 of Act 56 of 2001. 27. Section 28 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 2 of the following subsection. 2. The Code of Conduct is legally binding on all security service providers, to the extent provided for in this Act, on every person using his or her own employees to protect or safeguard merely his own or her own property or interests, or persons or property on his or her premises or under his or her control.
Continue.
Amendment of Section 30 of Act 56 of 2001. 28. Section 30 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. A. By the substitution in subsection 2 for the words preceding paragraph 8 of the following words. An appeal committee contemplated in subsection 1 is appointed by the minister and consists of B. By the substitution in subsection 2 for paragraph B of the following paragraph. B. Two other persons if considered appropriate by the minister. C. By the insertion after subsection 2 of the following subsection. 2a, small a, an appeal committee is appointed to function on a part-time basis for a period not exceeding 3 years on such terms and conditions as determined by the minister. B, a member of the appeal committee may resign by notice in writing to the minister. And D, by the substitution for subsections 4 and 5 of the following subsections. 4, the procedure in connection with the lodging and prosecution of an appeal in terms of this section must be prescribed by the minister through regulations. 5. The amounts payable by an appellant to the authority in respect of the reproduction of records and related matters in the lodging and prosecution of an appeal must be prescribed by the minister through regulations. And E. By the addition of the following subsection. 8. All costs relating or related to the appeals procedure must be borne by the authority.
Can I hear you, members satisfied? Agreed. Continue.
Amendment of Section 31 of Act 56 of 2001. 29. Section 31 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 5 of the following subsection. 5A. The Council, or the, is deleted, the Director may, if it is considered necessary in the circumstances, to acquire special expertise or to augment the capacity of the authority, temporarily appoint any person who is not in the full-time employment of the authority to assist an inspector with a particular inspection. Any appointment made in terms of paragraph A must be reported on quarterly by the council to the minister and must be included in the annual report referred to in section 16A.
Agreed. Continue.
amendment of Section 32 of Act 56 of 2001-30, Section 32 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the addition of the following subsection. The authority must include information on any penalties imposed under subsection 3 in the annual report. Amendment of Section 34 of Act 56 of 2001-31, Section 34 of the Principal Act is hereby amended, A, by the substitution for the words preceding paragraph 1 in subsection 1 of the following, A, without prior notice, subject to subsection 6, enter any premises, B, by the substitution for subparagraph 3 of paragraph 8 of subsection 1 of the following, 3, where, comma, or from where, comma, a security service is rendered, or the director has reason to believe that such a service is rendered. C, by the substitution in subsection 3 for paragraph B of the following. An inspector may use the powers in terms of this subsection only to serve the purposes of this act. And D, by the addition of the following subsection. 6, an inspection of private dwellings may only be carried out when authorized by a warrant issued by a competent court.
Satisfied, members? Agreement? Continue.
The amendment of Section 35 of Act 56 of 2001. Section 35 of the Principal Act is hereby substituted for the following section. Regulation 35.1. The Minister may make regulations relating to any matter which A, in terms of this Act is required or permitted to be prescribed, and B, generally is necessary or expedient to prescribe for the attainment or better attainment of the objects of this Act or performance of the functions of the authority. 1A, the Minister must make regulations relating to A, the requirements in respect of the infrastructure and capacity necessary for a security business to render a security service. B, the registration by the authority of security service providers, including the procedures in relation to the suspension, withdrawal and lapsing of registration. C, the procedures in respect of renewal of registration and the conditions upon which such applications are to be granted. D, the obligatory undergoing of security training by security service providers in respect of the different categories referred to in Section 21A1. E, ensuring the quality of training as contemplated in Section 4K or any other law in respect of security service providers and prospective security service providers. EA, guidelines in respect of insignia, emblem, title or symbol, whether on a uniform, vehicle or otherwise. F, the uniform insignia and registration, the uniform insignia and is deleted, and then the registration and identification certificates of security service providers. G, the types of uniforms, insert insignia, emblem, title, symbol, distinctive badges or buttons which may not be supplied to, used or worn by a security service provider. H1, the procedure for the institution and conduct of improper conduct, proceedings or any other inquiry in terms of this act. 2, the appointment powers and duties of presiding officers and other officials in respect of such proceedings or any other inquiry in terms of this act. 3, the attendance by a security service provider or any witness of improper conduct proceedings or any other inquiry in terms of this act. 4, cost orders with regard to improper conduct proceedings. 5, the procedure for the payment and collection of fines imposed in respect of improper conduct. 6, competent findings and other appropriate orders in respect of improper conduct. 7, the confirmation, review or substitution of any finding, punishment or other order contemplated in subparagraph 6, or the setting aside thereof by the authority. I, the establishment, management and functioning of a guarantee fund for the private security industry. J, the establishment and operation of a complaints office as contemplated in section 4R. K, the compulsory keeping of records and documents concerning the management, administration and other matters relating to the rendering of a security service and the format for keeping the records and documents, including the premises where the records and documents must be kept available. And L, the types of information which security service providers must furnish to the authority. L, A, the types of information which security service providers must furnish to the authority when rendering a security service outside the Republic. M, the issuing, possession and use of firearms and other weapons by security service providers. N, the safekeeping and disposal of records, documents and other objects seized in terms of this Act. O, the training, registration, use, treatment, transportation and general care of working animals by security service providers and other persons who employ security officers in or in connection with rendering a security service, as well as the registration of training centers of regard entry. B, the information to be furnished by security businesses to consumers or prospective consumers of security services. Q, the advertising of the services of security service providers and of security equipment. R, the use of certain types of equipment by security service providers in the rendering of security service. S, the manufacture, importation, selling, distribution, and possession of security equipment. SA is inserted, minimum standards applicable to security service providers responsible for the safe transportation of cash or goods with high value, including precious metals or jewelry. SB, minimum standards for the provision of security services at national key points, as referred to in Section 1 of the National Key Points Act, 1980, Act Number 102 of 1980. T, the limited engaging by the authority of the services of consultants when it is necessary to make use of such services. 2, different regulations may be made in terms of subsection 1 or 1A with reference to different categories or classes of security service providers. 3, regulations made in terms of subsection 1 or 1A may, in respect of any contravention thereof or failure to comply therewith, prescribe as a penalty a fine or imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years. 4, the minister must, after consultation with the council, issue guidelines or policies in relation to the governance of the authority within 6 months of the commencement of this Act, and thereafter as and when required. 5, any regulation made under this section must be tabled in Parliament for consideration.
Can I hear you satisfied? Agreed to? Mr. Ntuli, I do not expect people on the technical committee to now start asking questions. What is the issue?
Thanks, Chair, and I do take note of that. But I want to find it on page 15. There's a D there where we're saying by the addition of the following subsection, that then it says 6, an inspection of private dwellings may only be carried out when authorized by a warrant issued by a competent court. Now, Chairperson, what we have observed in dealing with other matters, when you deal with crime, you legislate on individuals, particularly due to corruption matters, what has been a trend? You find those individuals running away from, as individuals now, but now doing it through institutions. You find the very same regulating authorities like your government that are supposed to be compliant. You find those individuals now hiding behind it. You find that the company is still not meeting the correct accounting procedures, but is being given a passing rate in terms of audit. Now, with this one, you know, I'm also foreseeing this trend. I just want to find out where, when you legislate, say, because it looks like we'll make it not difficult, we'll make it to say the warrant, it not, I mean the search must now come through the court on this private dwelling. Now, from an operational guy in the security industry, it's simply then simply to say, no, what is easy for me? Let's rather go into the private dwellings, moving from this other place, because then that would mean there must be more applications that the, only the competent court must then allow for the search.
Okay.
I think there's no way around it. There's our legal requirements in terms of warrants. We make it a provision that CEDAW can have business premises they can go into without a warrant. But on a private dwelling, the house, they will need a warrant. The same with the police. The police cannot enter without a warrant. So I'm comfortable with it. Can I hear the technical team just on it, please?
Yeah, we are in agreement with that. I think the committee clear that when it comes to a private dwelling, there must be a warrant, and otherwise any business premises can be inspected without notice, just a normal inspection. But I think, Chair, it will be the exception where a house is actually used to store information and documents, etc., and we think it's fair that we need to approach a court in that regard for a warrant.
I think it will assist the council to understand where we are coming from. We don't want anybody to just to run to any private house and say that we are doing inspection and so on and so forth in any private house without any warrant. Because if you open that to this to any person who's going to search the house, then you are saying that any private house can be searched without a warrant. That is opening a lot of civil claims towards the police.
So, you've got a different opinion, or are you?
I mean, Chairperson, in addition, Chairperson, this issue has been decided in court cases, Chairperson, and it has been settled as such. That's where you search private dwellings, you need a warrant.
Can we then continue, please?
Chair,
where's the director of CEDAW? Are you here? Continue, please.
Chair, the amendment of Section 36 of Act 56 of 2001. 33, Section 36 of the Principal Act is hereby amended A, by the substitution for the heading of the section of the following: provision of information, and B, by the addition of the following subsections. The authority must inform the registrar as defined in Section 1 of the Firearms Control Act, Act No. 60 of 2000, at the time of any new registration, suspension, sale, transfer, liquidation, merger, lapsing, or termination of the registration of ownership of a security service provider, or any other material change or reason that would necessitate the licensing, relicensing, or disposal of firearms in the possession of such security service provider. 4. The registrar mentioned in subsection 3 must, at the written request of the director, submit a list of all firearms registered to a particular security service provider to the authority within 30 days of the request being made. 5. The authority must report to Parliament in respect of information provided by the authority to the registrar in terms of subsection 3.
Honourable Stubbe.
Chair, this is nothing, got nothing to do with this, but I'm just wondering, if the authority must inform the register of firearms control, new registrations, I presume that is, it's also part of the regulations. So, see, the other thing is, are they equipped at this stage, if they start a business tomorrow, to say that from henceforward every registration there will be a direct line to the firearms to comply with the Firearms Control Act and report it, and that's the in their internal working of their structure. I'm just thinking if they will be up to the task that is contained in this act.
I think we must remind ourselves what the section says. It is about the dual responsibility. So first of all, the responsibility on CEDAW is to say to the registrar of the Central Firearm Register that we have registered Company X to do security work that allows them firearms. First thing. So when the application is not going to come through CEDAW. So when the application goes to the registrar can check, have this company being registered to do a type of security service that require firearms. Then the second part of it is that, on the other hand, when a company is deregistered or when they cease to do business, they must also inform SAPS so that SAPS can then go and take back those firearms that have been issued to that company. I'm putting it very simple. There's obviously a process. And the registrar, in turn, must inform CIRA about the number of firearms that a company has applied for and that they've given to them and the types of firearms, so that when the inspectors go and do an inspection there, that they can actually check those firearms. So that is the process. So what we are talking about is a simple communication process, but I would give the director an opportunity. They are supposed to be doing this already, but I'll give him an opportunity to respond whether they are in a position. Director?
Thank you, Chairperson. We are currently doing exactly what is proposed in the bill.
Are you comfortable that you will be able to do so in future?
Regarding the reporting, we will have to configure the system so that the reporting becomes easier. So there will be structural arrangement that needs to be done so that the data is gathered and the reporting becomes much more efficient.
Sure, but what I'm saying is, in currently you are doing it, you can do it easier if the system is adapted.
Correct, so Chairman.
Mr. John?
You have touched what I wanted to say, but I'm not sure it's captured here. I would like a situation, Madam Chair, where the authority must be able to say at any given time that a service product by the A has got so many firearms. Like you said, so that when they inspect, they are able to know. I'm not sure it's good, so that, because at the moment, we ask the police, they don't know. We ask the question, we've been asking the police for the last few years, but there is a belief in South Africa that the security industry has got more firearms than police soldiers ever put together. That's why I don't know where we can come, so that the authority, if one wants a question, say, Director, how many firearms, or whatever types, does CHAP have? The director must just go to his file and say 100 R4 rifles, 100 R5 EDs. That's what I'm not sure is captured here, Madam Chair.
I think it is captured on the form. The register mentioned in subsection 3, that's the central firearm register, must, at the written request of the director, submit a list of all firearms registered to a particular security service provider to the authority within 30 days. So it is there. And what is more, nothing stopping them, after this act is passed, to ask for an update of all the security service providers that they know are legally owning firearms, to ask for the register to give them that information so that they have it on record to address what you have raised. I believe it's captured at the form. I don't know.
I think a problem, Madam Chair, I'm trying to be real. You know, the police, sometimes they've got their own mentality. I'm not sure to what extent does police cooperate on this one, and whether it is possible for us to legislate that police cooperate once they've given firearms license, they must inform the authority.
I think it is there. We've legislated for that. We've even put a time frame to it. So it is there. I don't think we can go further than that. If SAPS is not doing that, then SAPS is breaking this law as well. So I don't think we can go further than that.
Chairperson, mine is at page 55, subsection 5. Why are we saying the authority rather than the minister? Because in my own view, the authority through the council report to the minister, and the minister should be the one. Because I just the person accountable to Parliament is the minister.
Can you just respond to that?
If I remember correctly, I think it was especially for this reason that the committee said they want to check whether in fact there was a response either by from the registrar side or the SAP side to the information given to act upon. Because I think, Chair, the value of especially subsection 3 is the police wouldn't know immediately if a security business is transferred. There had been cases where security business carried on with the new owners. You're still using the firearms and the transfer did not take place in terms of the firearms. So I think it has huge value in terms of response time and acting before that situation is going on for a period.
I think the point here is that the point that the member is raising is what we wanted to see, and I think that is his question, is that it must form part of the annual report of CIRA. Now, I think the question that the member is raising, and if I'm wrong, member, please stop me, is that is it captured properly? The authority must report to Parliament, must report on it in its annual report. I think that's a better way, because then it goes via the minister the normal route. Obviously, the committee can still call them at any point in time and request this information. So I think if we can just reword that to say the authority must report on this matter in the annual report. Is that fine? Are you satisfied?
Not necessarily, Chairperson. I would have loved a scenario where we keep on, you know, focusing on the person supposed to account to Parliament. And in this regard, I felt it would have been appropriate if we were saying the minister, you know, instead of the authority, because I guess while we are sitting here assisting in the, you know, drafting of this law, but after we have done, the custodian of that law will be the minister, and it's the minister who should account to Parliament after whatever would have been getting from the authority or the council.
Can you just look at that wording for us? Come up with a suggestion. I think we're saying annual report because that goes through the minister. It's the minister that tables it, but you can just have a look at that for us. Can we continue, please? I want us to wrap up.
The insertion of section 36A in Act 56 of 2001. The following section is hereby inserted after section 36 of the Principal Act. 36A, security services rendered outside the Republic. 36A1, any person who within the Republic recruits, trains, hires out, sends or deploys any other person to provide a security service outside the Republic must A, provide to the director on a quarterly basis such information as may be prescribed regarding such recruitment, training, hiring out, sending or deployment or nature of security service within the prescribed time limits, and B, comply with the provisions of this Act. 2, a person referred to in subsection 1 may not engage in any activity or render any assistance that is prohibited in terms of the prohibition of mercenary activities and regulation of certain activities in country of armed conflict Act 2006, Act number 27 of 2006, or the regulation of Foreign Military Assistance Act 1998, Act number 15 of 1998. 3, any person who A, is employed by another person from outside the Republic, and B, is deployed from the Republic to perform armed guarding services outside the Republic, must at least 2 weeks before the deployment inform the authority of such deployment in the prescribed manner. 4, the information referred to in subsection 3 must be submitted by the authority to the State Security Service within 7 days of receipt of the notification.
Satisfied, members?
Can we continue?
Amendment of section 38 of Act 56 of 2001, 35. Section 38 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution in subsection 1 for paragraph B of the following paragraph. B, interferes with, resists, obstructs, hinders or delays an inspector, any other person lawfully accompanying an inspector or member of the service in the performance of any function in terms of this Act or the Levies Act. B, by the deletion in subsection 2 of the word or at the end of paragraph A, the insertion of the word or at the end of paragraph B, and the addition of the following paragraph. D, any security service provider who, 1, allows the use of any insignia, emblem, title or symbol, whether on uniform or vehicle or otherwise, or two, allows the use of any uniform which corresponds or can be confused with any uniform, insignia, emblem, title, symbol used. I think there should just be an or symbol used by the South African National Defence Force or the South African Police Service or a municipal police service. C, by the substitution in subsection 3 for subparagraphs 1, 2 and 3 of the following subparagraphs. 1, in the case of a natural person, on the first conviction of a contravention referred to in paragraph A, E, F, G and H, is liable to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 5 years, or to both a fine and such imprisonment, and in the case of a juristic person, to a fine. 2, in the case of a natural person, on a second or subsequent conviction of a contravention referred to in paragraph A, E, F, G and H, is liable to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 10 years, or to both a fine and such imprisonment, and in the case of a juristic person, to a fine. 3, in the case of a natural person on a conviction of a contravention referred to in paragraph B, C, D, or I, is liable to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 24 months, or to both a fine and such imprisonment, and in the case of a juristic person, to a fine. And D, the insertion of the following subsection after subsection 3A, any person who fails to comply with the provisions of section 36A1 or 3 is guilty of an offence and is liable, A, in the case of a natural person on the first conviction, to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 10 years, or to both a fine and such imprisonment, and in the case of a juristic person, to a fine. Or B, in the case of a natural person on a second or subsequent conviction, to a fine or to imprisonment for a period not exceeding 15 years, or to both a fine and such imprisonment, and in the case of a juristic person, to a fine.
Members, can I hear you? Satisfied? Agreed.
Small thing, I say. On Roman figure 3, on page 58, it says B, C, D, or I. Is it not supposed to be end? What are the significant cause for use or?
It's relating to any offence, and it can be one or two or three or all of them.
Are you satisfied with that? Maybe I want to say that let's stop here, because you've now still got to go and look at transitional arrangements. We could then start tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Do we know where we're meeting? Okay. They will inform members where we are meeting. We will start at. Members, we will start at 9 o'clock, and members will be informed at what venue we are. I'm asking the department to be in a position where you can take us through these new things. Also, there's few things about three things that we picked. Members, can we have one meeting, please? Can we will then go through those three small changes that we've picked up. It was ands and ors and things like that. There were some more that we've picked up. We'll give you an opportunity to go through the transitional arrangements plus these amendments that you're now proposing, and then we will put the bill for voting. So it must be cleaned up to vote as well. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. There is lunch.